Welcome to the Full of Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording, and it is 9:51 a.m. and that is London time. I'm flying back to the US today, so I thought I would get the video and audio done before I get on the plane. There's only one thing that people are talking about today, and it is the protests going on in China. And oil prices are down $2.58, and this is a new reaction low, so clearly extending the downtrend that's been in place since June. There was a very tight range between $90 and $100. Now that has been completed with a downside break, and these periods of inert trading give way to big breakdowns or breakouts. So this is a breakdown. And we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the downside until we see a countermanding upward dynamic. Now, I think a lot of people are going to be paying attention to the longer term trend. And there was plenty of resistance for a number of years around the $80 level. So now the big question is whether 80 is going to represent a period, or at least an area of short term support. And a lot is going to depend on what happens in China. When you have large groups of people congregating and shouting, well, then they're going to be expelling whatever is in their lungs to the people around them. And you're going to end up with a lot more people who end up with COVID. So the number of cases in China is likely to ramp higher over the course of the next few weeks. And then that is going to bring the entire COVID zero point to a head. So, if we're talking about hundreds of thousands of people protesting, then perhaps it might be slowed down. If we're talking about millions of people on the street, then the chances of containing COVID are practically zero. So, that suggests that any effort to sustain the COVID zero policy is doomed to fail. So it doesn't matter what happens, we're going to end up with the end of the COVID zero policy in China. That's, I guess, the first uncertainty. Now, the second one is what happens next? Are the administration going to follow true to pattern and then suppress this upstart rebellious movement? And that would be potentially violent. So it would then lead to a really significant period of opprobrium toward China. So that's obviously on the cards. It certainly cannot be ruled out because there are plenty of examples during the Xi administration where even the most modest form of protest have been forcibly suppressed. And everything from joke apps to the potential for a protest movement in Xinjiang with the mass incarceration of millions of people and forcible sterilization of a good proportion of the Uyghur population. So it's not like there aren't precedents for a really forcible suppression of a protest movement. But in order to get that number of people off the streets, then they'll have to start getting it done soon, before the protests grow, and they will certainly need the buy-in of the military. So many people think of the Communist Party as a single party policy, but under Xi, it has become a single person administration, and there's a lot of people within the Communist Party are not happy with that. So it's not like he has an absolute rule. And there are going to be factions within factions. And then, of course, the danger is that if anyone were to step up without the buy-in of the military, they will be then excised and single-person rule will persist, because that's exactly what happened during the Mao period. Then that is, of course, one of the reasons why we have oil going down. And why also there is downward pressure on copper. Now, of course, copper is a major renewable energy metal. So it pulled back and now it's off its lows and really does depend on what happens in China as to how much further it goes down. But I think it's also worth considering that when we think about oil, it's really a global supply demand question. Whereas when we think about copper, there are new advanced plans for increasing demand. So therefore, the lower the price goes, the more demand there will be from renewable energy sources. It suggests that copper does have downside potential, but potentially less volatile than the oil price. Now let's think about some of these stock markets. So if we just simply look at the Shanghai Composite, it was in negative territory, but not nearly in as dynamic of a manner as one might have expected. And of course, that is because it is controlled by the government. So paying attention to any of the Chinese asset prices, I don't believe is going to be especially fruitful because they are ultimately easily manipulated by the administration. So we can see, for example, that the Hang Seng was well off its lows in here today as well. But then let's think about, for example, one of the big luxury goods companies like Hermes, and this is a share that tends to do well in an environment where we have a buoyant Chinese consumer. And the share got all the way down to the region of the 1,000-day moving average right in the middle of this year, then rebounded. And now it's pausing below the 1,600 euro level. So we have a short-term overextension relative to the 200-day moving average. There's clearly potential here that it would sell off more if the protests turn into a really significant period of volatility for China. But I think what's happening in Taiwan also is something that we should pay attention to, because Chiang Kai-shek's grandson just won the mayorship of Taipei. And the reason that Taiwan has got a contested political environment is because of Chiang Kai-shek. He continued all the way through his administration, which lasted for decades. He continued to say that he was leading the government in exile. So the entire Kuomintang's modus operandi is to take back China on their own terms. So they favor reunification with China, but certainly not in favor of the Communist Party. And it does suggest that if China wanted to come in out of the cold, then they would do away with the Xi administration. They would promote people that were more, who have certainly been disaffected during Xi's administration, put other people in charge that were more Western friendly, like all those people who were in the Jiang Zemin administration, then make friendly with Taiwan, bring in some of those Taiwanese politicians into the Chinese government, peaceful reunification, and a new marketing and forward looking Chinese administration would be born. Of course, that would create massive problems for the global semiconductor sector. Everybody then would have a de facto takeover of Taiwan by China on peaceable terms, quite possibly even voted for in Taiwan. And then that would obviously put a lot more impetus onto building or expatriating a lot of the manufacturing facilities from Taiwan into other countries. Now, the semiconductor index is right in the region of the progression of lower rally highs and pausing. So then we can think that there's going to be a lot more supply of semiconductors. And therefore, the chances of this index getting up to 4,000 and then exceeding it on a really substantial basis, I don't think they're really there. We're much more likely to move into a prolonged ranging phase for semiconductors. What I found interesting today, though, is that Bitcoin was in negative territory. And we went from one very inert range to another, even more inert range. But we also know that these inert ranges give way to big breakouts. We saw it with oil, we're seeing it with Bitcoin. And when they move, they're going to move in a big way. That suggests that unless we see a really significant pop on the upside, the benefit of the doubt has to be given to the downside. Now, there are two, I think, very important points to be made, and it gives us an idea about how people are thinking about risk assets and valuations. The Fed's balance sheet is contracting, and the last time it contracted was in 2018 and 19. Every time a central bank has tried quantitative tightening, it has led to deflation, and we're going to have recessions. That's quite clear. But then the response to the recession and the response to slowing growth and to liquidity tightening events, and we've seen some of those appearing already. Well, it's usually that they've had to double the size of their balance sheets to contend with the deflationary issues. So the Fed's balance sheet right now is at 8.6 trillion. And it might even come lower. It might come down to 8 trillion. And it might even come down to the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And that would be somewhere around 7.5 trillion. But in the event that we do have a recession, they would have to then lower interest rates, make money supply greater. And then we would have the size of the Fed's balance sheet potentially double and more than double, which could take it up to 20 trillion. Now, if it goes to 20 trillion, Bitcoin's going to go wild. And we would see some of the more bullish forecasts where Bitcoin would trade into six figures, realize. So then it really is only a question of, has the world really changed? Are we in a new inflationary environment? And will central banks no longer adopt this type of strategy, where they just flood the market with liquidity? And will they instead be less forthcoming with supply? If that is indeed the case, and the world has changed and moved away from extraordinary monetary policy because of this inflation scare, then it's unlikely that Bitcoin will go on another multiplication factor bull market. But it will likely still bottom sometime next year because the halving is going to be in April of 2024. And therefore, it represents, I think, a high optionality play, that the chances are that it will bottom ahead of the halving. And then the question will be how much money is printed. We know there will be money printing, and there will be a response in terms of monetary policy to bring down interest rates into an unfolding recession. Then Bitcoin would offer optionality based upon how much money they print. And I think it's also worth highlighting that gold continues to steady. Now, it was not up in a dynamic manner today, but it is holding the upper side of that underlying short-term range, and it has broken the nine-month downtrend. So there's obviously the clear potential here that gold will also prosper, and it will certainly prosper if the dollar continues to remain weak. But any kind of geopolitical strength or geopolitical issues should lend some support to the dollar, and although we don't see a lot of evidence of that right now. And that is also interesting because Europe is much more dependent on Chinese trade than the USA is, and the euro is strengthening in here today. And what that suggests is the threat to US growth is real. And the potential is that the Federal Reserve will slow down the pace of their interest rate hikes in December. And that will start to narrow the interest rate differential with the euro. So that's positive for the euro. And the ECB is finally talking about actually meeting its mandate. And they haven't done that in a long time. So I think there is real potential here that the dollar could extend its decline. That would be positive for gold. I don't think that there's any real connection between the dollar and Bitcoin. It's really more about monetary policy and the halving cycle. But we are certainly still in a corrective phase overall, and the implication is that China is going to represent a headwind for growth going forward. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.